Donna Kitchen talks about food. Donna Kitchen talks recipes. Donna Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the ever surprising Donna Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctegal.
And I'm Donna Priskin-Tuss.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Yes, we do. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Ah, yes. The Donna Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus. Or drop on by.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Today on the Donna Kitchen, we welcome Sharon Stewart to our table. We actually have lots of things to talk about. It will be just really, really good. Good things with Sharon for today. It's feeling more and more like it could be spring. There are many smells
tastes. Do you think?
Oh, to celebrate. A little news, a little farm news from Onion Creek Farm. Twin lambs born last night on the farm. So we have little guys on the farm right now. And boy, does it look like spring out there.
That'll make it feel like spring.
Oh,
right.
It does. It does. It's green. There's baby sheep. It's good. Today we're going to be talking about good things to eat: cordials, syrups, shrubs, some wild greens, some mushrooms. Oh, Farmer's Market is up and running at the Ames Farmer's Market. We're so glad to see these folks there. We got things for sale are crickets, kringla, ice cream, and asparagus. Now, that's your food groups there, right?
Yeah.
I like that. Plus lots and lots of other things, lots of other things. Last weekend was Mother's Day, and I have a poem to share. This is a poem about moms and grandmas and all those folks that know how to sew. People used to sew a lot more and fix things, mend. I was fortunate to have a mom who, with her old Necky sewing machine, kept me well clothed and the family all together.
Did she teach you to sew?
She taught me to sew, and I just... I can attack things. She loved it. I don't love it. But I know how to fix things. I do know how to sew. But Mom really had a way with things. And this is a poem from Ted Kooser from a book called Delights and Shadows. Poe is a poet laureate of the United States. He has an Iowa connection, too. And this is a poem about sewing. And it's called A Jar of Buttons. A Jar of Buttons. This is a core sample from the floor of the Sea of Mending, a cylinder packed with shells that over many years sank through fathoms of shirts, pearl buttons, blue buttons, and settled together beneath waves of perseverance, an ocean upon which generations of women set forth under the sail of gingham curtains and seated side by side on decks sometimes salted by tears, made small but important repairs.
Ha-ha!
A poem by Ted Kooser. And I send that out to my mom. That was a little bit for Dorothy. Thanks, Mom, for sewing all those years.
I still have my mom's sewing machine.
Oh, very good.
That I grew up and made a lot of my wardrobe with.
I also have my mom's sewing machine.
Yeah.
It's good to know those
skills.
It's a
beautiful old black Singer, probably from the 30s, really reliable.
Very good. Well, Donna, introduce our fine guest today.
Okay, we have the lovely and talented Sharon Stewart here with us. So Sharon is, among other things, opening something she calls the Lockwood Cafe, and it is out at Reliable Street. So first we have to say, Sharon, tell us what Reliable Street is so we can get the foundational parts of the story.
Sure. So Reliable Street is... it's a lot of things, but to try to simplify it and make it a concise thing and not talk for 45 minutes, it's essentially a physical space. It's an old grain elevator on Reliable Street that we've kind of now turned Reliable Street.
What is it? On the northwest side of town.
Yeah.
And it's big, concrete thing you can't miss, right on the railroad tracks.
And Reliable Street is only essentially a two-block-long street.
What a great name.
I know.
Yeah,
and so it fits.
Perfect.
Where else are you going to be? Reliable Street.
Yeah.
And if you're on Reliable Street, you can see Reliable Street. So it's this old grain elevator. Lindsay Nissen and Elliot Thompson bought a few years back, and they are in the process of
repurposing.
It and making it a community art space. And part of that is going to be Lockwood Cafe, which we are opening in the grain elevator as part of the Reliable Street project, but also as a business in and of itself, separate of the nonprofit. So at the same time, we'll have a gallery space that'll be right next to the cafe and be accessible during cafe hours and all sorts of community activities and fun stuff.
And when is it going to open? When are you going to be delivered of this project? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I will say the process of opening has been such an amazing experience to go through with my husband and with friends and the community that I wouldn't say the opening date is the end. I would say it's the end of the soft opening, or the beginning.
Right.
Like, it's really been – the opening process has in and of itself been a beautiful experience that I feel like we've really enjoyed this whole time.
And so if the rest of us – it was a pop-up cafe all summer long. And I went out for crepes. And good coffee.
Yeah.
And that will continue,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. We will definitely have coffee.
Right.
We'll
so
be serving morning
coffee.
You still
haven't said a date. Sure.
I know. You like how I just moved right around there?
Yeah, right.
So we've started a Kickstarter that ends, I believe it's the 4th of next month.
Just say what a Kickstarter is
in case
some of us are still living under a rock.
It's a crowdsourcing platform to raise funds for a business project. But we're not really using it just for that. Kickstarter has been kind of confused with how we're trying to use the platform because we're not just looking for financial donations. We'd also be interested in people donating their time or art. And the idea is whatever the donation is, it's the same reward. So on the Kickstarter page, if you go there, you can go to Kickstarter and just search Lockwood Cafe and find our Kickstarter page. You can also email us if you have a hard time with that, or it's on Facebook, on our Lockwood Cafe Facebook page. But the idea is that no matter what the gift is, we want to say thank you in the same way. So we really want our gratitude to be consistent no matter what people are giving. So no matter what the gift is, you get a choice of getting two tickets to our what we're calling our Lockwood Gala.
Or
you can have a care package sent to you with a bottle of our Lockwood syrup and a little zine that explains how to use the syrups and potentially other small items.
And tell us about the Lockwood Gala.
So the Lockwood Gala will be June 8th.
Ha! We have a date. June 8th. Put that on the calendar.
Yes,
okay.
June 8th is the gala. And so from there, we hope to be ready to announce our official opening day.
Well, what's happening at the gala then?
So the gala is not our official opening. It is an invite. There's all of these. So this is the process of opening a cafe or a
Well, when it's your business, you can do it any way you want, right?
Well, to set a date, you know, your final inspection happens and you hope that you're ready after that, but you might get tagged on something and have to do some additional work or do, you know.
So then the gala is not an opening. It's actually – then it's billed as a private party or something?
Which is why we're doing the Kickstarter.
Then
you get a personal invitation to attend. It is a private event. It is not part of our open to the public event. Having said that,
just
if
in
you'd
case
like
everything's
to
come, not all
yeah. exactly
okay,
it's,
okay,
it gives us a safety net to make sure
right.
that we stay within all of the
right because you're not actually opening it to the public and you're not actually charging money. So
exactly.
okay,
exactly, it's a private event.
Well, tell us as of today, what state is the facility in?
So as of today, let's see.
Did I notice you have the new garage doors in?
Yes,
because the cafe is in the front part of the old grain elevator, and there are two double-wide garage doors
for the
entrance, basically, right? Okay.
Yeah, so we have all new windows and garage doors. The biggest thing, and the thing that took the longest, was getting running water. That was a really big deal. So we now have a faucet you can turn on and off, which feels really luxurious.
Makes cleaning a lot easier,
doesn't
it?
It really does. So, yeah, so for all of the outdoor cafes for the last two summers, we've had to bring potable water with us. So the morning routine involved going to get ice, going to get water, finishing any last-minute prep and then getting and then
opening.
Yeah, that's
a real pop-up, isn't it?
we're really excited to have running water. We also have all of the electric run. We have all of the plumbing essentially run to the different locations. So this week, all the
plus
drywall.
You've been collecting equipment forever.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've definitely taken the long game perspective of how to open a cafe. But we're finally at the end where the progress is really visible and easy to talk about. And so that's why we waited until now to do the Kickstarter. Because until then, it's hard to say, well, what happened this week? Well, I had three different conversations with people and we might have someone showing up on Tuesday. You know, like it's hard to explain the process of time and what's happening. But now that we are in a place where we can do a lot of the work ourselves, we can have a clear idea of when things are progressing. So this week, my husband and I are putting up all the drywall, and we finished framing the last wall yesterday. So we had to, we did all steel studs. It's been a process.
I'm imagining you and Austin in there putting up the drywall. Where do you stash the children while you do that? They're helping, right?
Public school's amazing.
Now, here, this is a thought to all of you people out there who romantically think, oh, boy, I'll just open a little restaurant. Wouldn't that be fun?
We'll just a little one. Just a little coffee shop.
So there seems to be a process here. Before you even get talking, we haven't even talked about food yet. What are some of the pitfalls or things you have climbed into and gotten out of? What are some of the adventures?
There's so many.
The parking one first.
Yeah, the parking
took
almost a year.
What?
So we actually worked with the city to get the language changed for our zone to allow on-street parking to count as our parking requirement.
Who would have thought, right?
So it took us a year, but it also saved us more money than any of us make in a year, and also maintained a green space on the property that we really wanted. That's our community garden. So if we hadn't done that, we would not have this amazing community garden space. We'd have a big parking lot. So all of these steps have taken a lot of time, and we've been so fortunate to be working with Lindsay and Elliot, who've afforded us that time to make these decisions and to have kind of this drawn out process. But it's also saved all of us a lot of money.
Well, it also made people around town well acquainted with the project.
Yeah.
Because you had to do public presentations at the city council, all kinds of good, fun, small town things.
And it's also informed our process. I mean, we haven't had to make decisions that need to be made in a week that determine the major layout or the major function of the space and how
people
move.
What can we do? So now another big stumbling block that people don't think about in restaurants is talk about what a grease trap is.
A grease trap is expensive.
Yeah.
And so the Ames is really particular about the grease traps, which to Ames' credit, we do have amazing water. So there is something to be said about that. But the biggest thing that we've seen with a lot of these different major costs up front.
Explain what a grease trap is.
So a grease trap is essentially a holding tank that when fluids go down the drain.
Water and, yeah.
Any, you know, water, milk, anything like that that goes down the drain, it allows the grease to kind of separate from the water. And the water goes back into the sewer system. And then the grease you actually have to get cleaned out on a very regular basis.
Right. So every food establishment in town, even like the dev over at Morning Bell had to have a very expensive grease trap put in. And he's only selling coffee.
Yes.
But if you put milk in your coffee.
Even Littlewoods, the tea shop, they had to get a grease trap in as well.
Right.
So it's really one of those things that you don't think about is I'm just going to open a little cafe.
Price ranges on a grease trap.
So going back to the workaround method that we've done, I actually, in looking for a grease trap, I realized that a lot of people wanted to work directly with the plumbers to give the price to the plumbers, and they wouldn't give it to me directly as the business owner. And so I actually made Lockwood a plumbing business for about a week and called. So I called. They wouldn't give me the price, and then I said, okay. And then I went and, set up an account.
This is Lockwood Plumbing and Supplies, yes?
Yeah, I set up an account through their page and registered myself as a business and then called back. And I'm sure this was totally legal. But then I called back and I said, yeah, I'm in your system. The guy was so funny. He said, "Didn't I just talk to you?" I said, "Yeah. Yeah, but I should show up in your registry now. So can you tell me the price now?" So I went around and I actually found the best price for a grease trap was actually in Missouri. And so I drove with my infant child to Missouri to pick it up. That saved all the shipping costs. So we were able to get one for a few thousand dollars, whereas normally they can be upwards of, you know, 10 to 15. So.
Well, yeah. And then there's the whole installation of and where it goes and how you have access to clean it. So there's construction costs.
And that's where it gets really expensive.
Yeah.
We had to dig up a lot of concrete, which again, we rented the jackhammer and went out there and did about half of the concrete, and then we all got worn out. We actually made it a community work day, and so we had a number of people coming out.
It's like, let's have a jackhammer party.
But people were so excited to be able to come out and jackhammer some concrete. I mean, who?
Well, how often in your life does everybody do that, right? And the thing about Reliable Street is, and I've forgotten what Elliot told me, but on the day that they poured the concrete for took like 3 to 5 days of constantly pour. I mean, the building is pure concrete.
Yeah.
Like the ceiling of your building is a slab of what, 5 foot thick concrete or something outrageous.
It is. It's all extremely overbuilt. We had a structural, Lindsay and Elliot had a structural engineer come in and evaluate the building before purchasing it. And the guy said, "Look, this place isn't going anywhere." And
I think that's the period when they were building bomb shelters, if I remember right.
Yeah. 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 It definitely fits that model. Structurally
sound. An above ground, very tall bomb shelter.
Yeah. But even, I mean, so the property itself, even to get our use changed, we kind of had to figure out a workaround. Because if we did a use change for that whole space, then it would require sprinkler systems. And that would add the whole, you know, that would change the cost again. So we actually figured that with where the structural
walls
were.
It's not exactly flammable, is it?
Well, right? But that's where the code and the practice of the code become this really tricky maneuvering.
Isn't your husband an architect?
No.
Oh,
no.
He's not.
He's
okay.
An artist.
Oh, okay, in the art and architecture department. Okay.
Well, in the College of Design,
right,
which houses,
okay.
So the College of Design houses architecture,
so you know a
landscape
few architects.
Architect.
Okay.
Yes. We've got a friend or two. Yeah, so.
So how did you get it without having to put in a sprinkler system?
So we actually put in 3-hour fire barriers to separate the spaces that we change the use. So we essentially have a separate building within the building. So because those fire barriers make it a totally separate space, then we kept our occupancy under 100, then we no longer set off the requirement for sprinklers.
Oh, for goodness sake. So all of you people out there that are dreaming, this is just like the tip of the restaurant iceberg. I mean, this has been a process. So before we move on to other things, beyond all of this stuff, just tell us a little bit about the good food that you're going to be serving. Kind of move from the grease trap to the good stuff.
So what we're going to be serving is essentially, we're going to be like
a coffee shop.
It is. It's a coffee shop.
So you're going to do coffee shop hours.
Yep. We're going to be open to start with. We're going to open Tuesday through Saturday, close Sunday and Monday. I have two small children and a family day is necessary. I fear won't be small forever. And then Monday kind of affords us time to keep up with everything. So open Tuesday through Saturday. We'll open at 6:30. We had when the firefighters came through, one of their gripes, or not gripes, but one of the things they mentioned was that there isn't a coffee shop that they can go to that's local that opens before 7. And so I told them I will open before 7. So staying true to my word, any firefighters that are listening to this, we will be open at 6:30. As per my agreement. And then we're closing at 4:30. And that gives me time to be home with my family for dinner as well.
Right. And obviously people. So besides coffee.
Yeah.
What are people having with their coffee?
So we're going to do crepes. We're going to primarily focus on crepes. We have a very simple but solid crepe menu with as many locally sourced items as possible. When I say simple, I don't mean that in terms of the palate. I mean that in terms of the complexity of the
preparation.
The time involved to make. So one of the things I wanted was food that could be made fresh and taste fresh. So crepes are great. We can have, we have everything from a dosa, which is a southern Indian crepe made with essentially...
It's potato flour, isn't it?
No, it's what? It's lentils.
Oh, that's right.
Fermented lentils.
Right. But so it is white.
It is white. Yeah. And bubbly with the fermentation. It's wonderful.
And so that one is vegan.
So, yep. And we do a masala potato with that. Get the dosa batter actually from PAML. So the other thing is we're also looking to source as much as possible from people in the community. So Little Woods is providing our tea. Morning Bell is providing our coffee. We're getting a lot of other things from local farms and other local businesses like PAML. So we'll do the dosa. We've also got a buckwheat crepe.
And yippee!
Yes.
That's my favorite.
And then kind of the traditional crepe. And then we're playing around with the chickpea crepe as well.
Oh.
So we're
fancy.
Yeah,
it
we'll
sounds
see.
Pretty darn good. And we're looking forward to the opening of the Lockwood Cafe. Give your website so if people are interested in your Kickstarter.
Yeah, so for the Kickstarter, if you go to Kickstarter and search Lockwood Cafe, that'll be the easiest way to get to the Kickstarter. And it's been up for about a week, and we've just been completely in awe of the community support. It's been amazing. And then also we have a Facebook page that we try to keep updated with local happenings, and we are in the process of getting our webpage up and running.
Good.
Currently has a picture of a cat, I'm told.
Well,
more to come.
A placeholder.
Who could not like that? So stick around. We have lots more to say, lots more to do with Sharon Stewart from the Lockwood Cafe. This is KHR Radio, and this is Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. Joining us at our kitchen table today is Sharon Stewart, and she is going to soon be bringing us all kinds of good stuff from the Lockwood Cafe, northwest edge of town, and I mean the edge of town. It's in a grain elevator, and you can't miss it, and it probably will withstand a tornado. So what a good place to be. So I'm learning new things all the time. My gosh, people tell me you could eat things I didn't know you could eat. You could drink things. So a lot of things are homemade. And we'd like to continue our discussion with Sharon here with shrubs, cordials, syrups. Tell us about this whole genre here.
Well, you make syrups, and what do you do with them? What are you going to do with them at the cafe?
So we make syrups. We've got an amazing person, Carrie, who works at Morning Bell as well, who works with us to make the syrups. And we sell those to Morning Bell, uses them in their coffee drinks. Wheatsfield uses them.
As flavorings added to
flavor, yeah.
So what are the flavors?
Oh, there's a long list. We do anything from walnut and sage to lavender rose to jalapeno basil. We really just like to play around with what's available, what's seasonal, and what
sounds fun. Yeah, so a syrup is basically sugar and water and whatever you're flavoring it
with. Exactly, yeah.
Oh, how nice. And to have that stuff, well, you're kind of doing a magical process. Then you end up with a bottle on the shelf, and you can put that in things.
Absolutely.
Have you tried our rose geranium yet?
I have. It's amazing.
See, you did it with rose.
I am the preacher of rose geranium on the planet. I love it. I love it. It's such a good flavor maker.
So to make a syrup, it's a heated process, and you just let it sit for a while, or are you done just as soon as you heat it?
So it depends on what
the ingredient.
Ingredients we're using. So we have a couple different extraction methods, mm-hmm. but most of them do entail really essentially making a tea.
Steeping.
Yeah. Using whatever, you know, ingredients were a lot of the dry ingredients we get from Littlewoods, anything that's, yeah, in season we try to get from local sources and, yeah, we make syrups. And then at the Outdoor Cafe, we use those syrups to make fresh lemonade as well, which we did at the farmer's market last summer.
That's a really good idea.
Oh, is that ever good? Lemonade is good to start with on a hot summer day, but put in something special.
Speaking of, Lana's husband Joe made something last week. Do we call it a shrub? What are we calling it? A red bud cordial.
Uh-huh.
Timely.
Huh? Yes.
And now
it's only a brief window during which this can be made every year, and it is now.
This comes to us from a wonderful forager named Ben Hawksh, and he's been on the show before, and he's often coming to my door and saying, here, taste this, and I usually do. And now red buds, those ornament trees all over town
huh? Right now.
Just
it looks like a tree shape that's just turned pink.
Pink. Now, red bud cordial, they have all these flowers on before the leaves come, and this actually ferments a bit. It gets a little fuzzy. You could let it go. You can let it go to a stronger sort of alcohol content if you'd like. But the recipe, and you end up with a jar, about a gallon of pink stuff that is fizzy, wonderful, and actually the smell is amazing. It's amazing. Here's the recipe. 2 cups of red bud blossoms. Not hard to pick this time of year. 2 cups sugar, 4 quarts water, 2 lemons. Juice the lemons and add the rinds in with this too. Put this all in a big jar. And then add 2 tablespoons of live vinegar, live culture vinegar, not the citric acid stuff.
Braggs or something. Yeah.
Then you stir once a day. Put this on your counter. Don't put it in the refrigerator. Put it on the counter and cover it with a cloth. Don't let bugs get into it. But you do want the active yeast to get into it because the yeast on the flowers, the yeast in the air starts things bubbling. You leave it on the counter for at least 3 days and stir it gently once a day. Make sure everything is clean. And then keep tasting it. It gets a little fizzy. It gets a little fermented. Stop it whenever you want to by putting it into the refrigerator. Strain it when you're done and put it in the refrigerator. And, boy, it is good. That is red bud cordial.
It's very it's very light in its flavor, but it's very floral. But you would have a hard time guessing what the floral is. It's not rose. It's not lavender. Those are more common ones. It was really a thrilling delight, and I suppose it's a what's that word? Shrub, because it has the vinegar in it, right?
Right. I thought shrubs might have. You can also add booze to this stuff, so yeah, and steep things in liquor too. But this is just sugar and blossom.
Well, shrubs don't.
Oh, shrubs don't.
Don't have to have liquor at all. In fact, they do make good cocktail mixers.
This would
be lovely with champagne, I have to say.
Oh, always thinking in the right direction. From a book that Donna gave me called The River Cottage Handbook No. 2, Preserves by Pam Corbin. It's an English book. They have a whole chapter on cordials and heaven knows things and squashes. That's a very English sort of thing. Same idea. Let things ferment a bit and steep in water. There's an elderflower cordial. Elderflowers will come out later, midsummer. Elderberries, you know, elderberries all in the ditches all along here in central Iowa. Right now, also besides red buds blooming, there are, maybe we're a little past, but plum, wild plum blossoms also had that amazing smell. Mm-hmm. And I've tasted one made with plum blossoms. And it's worth the trouble. Yes, it is. I haven't tried it with apple blossoms, but boy, what a year for apple blossoms. That might be really good to try. Yes. Ah. Again, steeping things on your counter.
I have to say, the Redbud cordial, I thought, was more successful than some of the elderflower ones.
Elderflower is so subtle that...
That was more hard to manage. The Redbud is surprisingly blithe.
Oh, good word.
It works. That making it easier for... You know, it wasn't that hard. I mean, Joe made it. I didn't make it, but it sure sipped easy, but it didn't sound very complicated to make either.
No, it's nice to try something like that on your counter. And a couple shows ago on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we talked about those things that come up in the wild that we just walk by every day. And yes, we can enjoy them, drink them, eat them. Very good. Very good. You make shrubs. Shrubs you've had in the past. What flavor did you make of a shrub?
Well, last year I tried one that I thought made good cocktails. I mean, for us oddballs that like to try all kinds. It was made with yellow beets.
Oh, for goodness. Yellow beets?
Yeah, and I think it had coriander in it. I can't remember. And there were some more. I mean, there's just unlimited flavors. So shrubs were... According to the shrub book, which I should have brought the title in, but I forgot it this morning, it talks about how during this sort of early American history, certainly before the advent of soda pop, you know, what do people drink that was non-alcoholic? And so, you know, yeah, of course they drank a lot of water. But sometimes water wasn't always so tasty, or it also doesn't quench your thirst. So shrubs have a tiny bit of acid, usually vinegar, in them. So they they don't ferment to the point of being what you would really feel like was alcoholic, but they do have that tang. So, like, you know, if you're out threshing the wheat and you're working up a thirst and the woman comes out with a bucket of shrub, that vinegar helps quench your thirst.
Yeah.
And so shrubs are, I can remember my dad telling me that when he was a kid, during the haying time, this would have been Western Illinois, but we have it here too, there is some kind of wild ginseng that grows.
Mm-hmm.
No, wild ginger, I think. Is there a wild ginger around here?
There's like tons of wild ginger around
here. Okay, that's what he told me. They would make the beverage out of. They would pick that wild ginger and, the root, and put it into the water, probably with a little vinegar because, of course, they didn't have lemons. That's tropical. So, and that made a tasty beverage that you could make in quantities, you know, to serve, you know, when you had working crews and things like that, or even just around the house. So that is the origin of shrubs. And then, of course, we've had, as usual, a shrub renaissance. So people are making, like, cocktail mixers. And I think even there are companies, I see some New England company is bottling shrubs and selling it. But they're very, very easy to make. And actually, over the summer, we will come back with some shrub recipes.
Oh, very good.
Very good.
So there are syrups.
Syrups, which are sugar-based, right?
Yeah.
And shrubs, which are vinegar-based.
Right. And
do have sugar in them.
Yeah. And Redbud cordial, this cordial recipe also has sugar in it, but it
sugar and lemon, which made it unusual. But it was good.
Nice.
It was good.
So I
say those ingredients again, because people could still go out and do it. It's really fun.
All right. Here goes.
Children could drink it even.
Yes. 2 cups of red bud blossoms.
Just the little flowery parts. They're very...
The pink
send
stuff.
Send the child out to pick
the
it.
Pink stuff. Then if set them up in the tree. Okay. 2 cups sugar, 4 cups water, 2 lemons, juice, and add the rinds to this mixture.
The whole
too.
Thing.
Yeah. And 2 tablespoons of live vinegar. Put it in a gallon sort of jar. Stir it once a day. Make sure your spoon is clean and set it on the kitchen counter. Cover it with a cloth for at least 3 days or more and taste it when you are It's happy with
really
the taste.
Fun. It would make a lovely little children's tea party. Yeah.
Yes, yes. You strain out the flowers, and there you have it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good. It's good. So you mentioned coffee, Sharon. You have coffee at your wonderful Lockwood Cafe.
We surely do.
I've run across some surprising ferments. Oh, coffee kombucha. Huh? Got that?
Huh? Now, coffee kombucha. I have to say, Lana is really good with kombucha. I don't do as well. Her kombuchas always taste good. They always seem to work.
I think it likes to live on my counter. I don't know. My kombuchas always work. I haven't made this yet because I've got another kombucha fiend of a friend who does. Oh, he tries all kinds of things that I would never. And I, here, try this coffee. He took my mother, the SCOBY, and he,
which is the live part of the kombucha, the
gooky looking thing on the top, and he makes lots of different kombuchas. But and get this, he actually saved spent coffee grounds and stored them up in a jar and a jar and a jar. And
now that it's a thrifty product,
process. Yeah. And hit that jar with hot water or boiling water again to steep a bunch of coffee out of these spent grounds. Let that cool off. And he did add some sugar because the SCOBY's going to want some sugar. Mm-hmm. And turned that into some surprising coffee kombucha.
So he's just using coffee instead of the way you normally use tea, right?
Yeah. Expand our minds here, Expand our minds. And I tasted it. Did you taste it too?
I haven't tasted it, but we've talked about it
a few
times.
It's a legend already in central Iowa.
Yes, we plan to experiment.
I have tasted it. It does not immediately tastes like coffee because it's got this brewed sort of tang to it. I'd say it tastes like a dark beer without the beer hops. It's got that sweet, dark, smoky taste.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm really excited to try it.
Three cheers to Omar
and
his coffee kombucha. We'll get back to you on that as we – and I also want to mention – are there any other fun things we've done with kombucha? Oh, it just keeps growing.
You're the kombucha person.
I just keep putting things in there.
I've killed the last two SCOBYs you've given me.
Well, there's always more. There's always more.
Well, they weren't exactly dead, but they looked suspect. So I thought, oh, I've done it wrong again. Maybe in the summer I'll try. This was a long, dreary winter.
Not exactly dead. How do you tell with a kombucha mother? They never look very lively to me.
No,
but it
wasn't dried out. It was just, I don't know. It was suspect, right?
Another good thing about this time of year.
All right.
Go ahead.
Evan just sent us a note. Somebody is making what's it all say?
Jackhammer.
Oh no!
Look at the top
the
one
the
or the bottom one.
Kombucha IPA.
Kombucha
by Rogue. Yeah.
Oh, Rogue makes a kombucha IPA. And what's it called?
They did last year. It's called Culture Clash.
Culture Clash
with K's.
So that's Rogue. Those are the Oregon brewers. Yeah, their stuff is usually really, really good. So
see things that you can kind of just
just fascinating. Really good.
Grab out of the wild. We'll take a little break here, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about another fine things that happens this time of year. Mushrooms. Oh, mushrooms. This is KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. Support this fine community radio station. You can go to the Donalana Kitchen page there, find our archives, find recipes, and do support this station.
Thank you.
We're back. This is the Donald in the Kitchen. Oh, spring things, spring things. And we're talking about good things to eat with Sharon Stewart from Lockwood Cafe. Mushrooms, Sharon. Mushrooms.
We love mushrooms.
Spring. I have a little, well, two mushroom things here. I always go hunting for morels, and I can't say that I'm ever going to get rich hunting for morels. I find some. They're out there.
Enough to eat.
Yeah, some. That's good. But this seems to be a very good year for pheasant back mushrooms. Yes. We call them pheasant back here.
And not only that, they're big, which
they're
makes
big.
It really rewarding.
And you can find these any place that's a down tree. I mean, it's a good year. They're a shelf kind of mushroom.
Right.
They're
like big. This one is maybe 6 to 8 inches across. Yeah. So.
And they're called pheasant back because they're all speckly and pretty. And actually, the one I brought in is kind of plain. They can even get orange and yellow and pretty. They're a really nice mushroom.
And do you eat how? You don't. How much of it do you eat? Where does it get
woody? The trick is, that's too big. I brought in this great big honker one. Get little ones.
Oh, the
little
like 4-inch ones, yeah. ones are more tender. Okay, that makes
sense. Picture this half moon, and right in the middle of that is a hard stem. It's growing like a shelf.
So you can tell by the texture, the feel of it.
I just cut out
the outer fringes.
You can tell where your knife goes through. The pheasant back mushroom is also called Dryad's Settle. And Dryad, of course, checking
who
with the person.
Who calls it that?
Well, anybody who thinks in terms of fairies and woodland nymphs. And I checked with Evan, our fine engineer, who knows everything. And he said, yes, Dryad is a woodland nymph. So Dryad's Settle is what it's also called. Now, I find I have sliced off the soft parts.
They are saddle shaped.
Yep, the soft parts. Yep. And yes, you can fry them. Now, they're not going to be soft and lovely like a morel. You have to kind of fry them for quite a while. Cut them up small, and they really are good. But make sure you cook them well. Or what I like to do is cut them up very small, slice them up, and dry them. I put them in a food dryer.
Oh.
And they are fantastic
I'm just going to munch on one, one of the dried ones. It's like a mushroom potato chip.
It is.
Oh, wow.
Now, what I'm going to, I'm going to keep doing this until they no longer show up. I'm going to make some more jars of this. And you can put that in a little spice grinder or a Cuisinart, and you end up with mushroom dust, which is really fine to put in a soup.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good. That nice smell. And again, Dryad Saddle or pheasant back.
Can't you just also like boil them in the base of a soup and have mushroom stock?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Make sure you get the dirt bits off.
But now you could. I suppose these are like mushrooms. You sort of rub them with a cloth and pick the dirt off. You don't really want to get them wet.
No, I wouldn't get them wet. For one thing, if you want to dry them, you just have more water to get rid of.
Right, and they sog out, which is also when you fry mushrooms, any mushrooms, why they just take that oil right into them. So,
three cheers for spring. Three cheers for mushrooms. And another hats off to Mr. Ben Hawk, our forager. He came to my door today. I gave him some spring garlic. There was some garlic growing in a place I didn't want, so I pulled up a bunch of spring garlic. And here, Ben, have some spring garlic. And he brings back to me a small little Tupperware container here with this mixture in it. And he said, here, try this, which I usually do, and butter, mushrooms, and spring garlic.
Oh, delicious. That's wonderful.
Now, he fried the mushrooms, chopped up tiny, fried, and while it was still warm and chopped up and also put the spring garlic with the green bits in the fry pan, while it's still warm. Not super warm, but while these things are still warm, add it to butter and stir it up.
So did he fry it in butter or olive oil?
Oh, I didn't ask.
It doesn't look like it's got olive oil.
I don't think
it looks
would.
Like butter on butter.
It even
the mushrooms have that flavor of being fried in butter, not olive oil.
There's a difference. There is a difference.
Unctuous.
It's wonderful.
Oh, it's really good.
Unctuous is good.
Yeah.
Oh, I also back to some surprising ferments. I also have heard of a mushroom kombucha. Steep mushrooms. Huh?
Yep. I've heard
well,
of this
it's
as well.
Technically a kombucha is a mushroom. It's a is it a fungus?
It is a symbiotic combination of yeast and fungus. It's two things.
So maybe they're cousins of funguses
something like that.
But you actually put mushrooms in with the Scooby?
You'd make a tea and steep it and then put that tea.
Oh, make the tea with the mushrooms.
Yeah. Huh?
Oh, so that would be like the boiling of the mushroom stock.
Then. Yeah, like
so it's a
stock.
Water extraction.
Water extraction. There you go.
Now, and if you're putting your Scooby in the water extraction of mushroom, obviously you will have to add sugars again.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But can you use just the straight mushroom broth, or do you have to add?
You have to remember that the Scooby wants sugar.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what kind of sugars does it need? Like, what's the? Can it be any sweet? Does it have sugar?
It could be honey and that kind of stuff. It may
or like
take
agave or any
agave. It may take longer. I'm not proud. I just put sugar in.
And then when does the alcohol content of the – right? Because that's – as a restaurant person, that's what we have to figure out is we can't have alcohol content past 3%.
You have to get some sort of alcohol content reader to see what it is. It takes a long time for it to be like strongly alcohol.
Yeah.
But any ferment, that's what it's doing. It's turning the sugars into, which also makes it easier for our stomachs to digest, whether you are a teetotaler or not. Really, it takes a long time. Although, as you taste these concoctions, even with the cordials, it gets a little sharper.
A little bit more fizzy.
Fizzy.
On a standard kombucha, for you in an arbitrary temperature time of the year, how long do you usually let your kombucha sit before you start flavoring and decanting?
Before I start decanting? Anywhere from 6 to 10 days.
The warmer, the shorter, right?
The warmer, the shorter. Uh-huh. And that assumes I remember, you know. I mean, this is I'm not a scientist about this.
But you do have the touch of it. You know?
I do. It's this thing. It's
a rhythm, isn't it?
It's like sourdough. It's this thing on your counter. It's sort of like having a puppy. You know, you check on them every now and then. Yes, it is. Speaking of puppies.
Segue. Okay.
A past contributor to this fine station in Time and Talent, Nick Odey. Nick Odey with Practical Farmers of Iowa. His dog Ginger just had 9 puppies.
Oh
my goodness.
Well, and Ginger is a very special. What is she?
Oh, I don't know. Some kind of fancy schmancy hunting dog.
She's some kind of retriever. She's a golden retriever, highly trained golden retriever.
And I'm sure.
So these are going to be very
puppies.
Oh, and he had some horrible story about he sent her to the breeder because it had to be a special breeder, and it happened when the big floods were in southern Iowa, and they went through all kinds of things to get her back.
Actually, she was across the Missouri River in Missouri at a breeder.
Well, she didn't swim home.
Well, no, but it was kind of like rescue dogs time.
Yeah, so she came home really unhappy, but apparently it worked.
Unhappy and pregnant? I can't imagine.
There you go. Pregnant and barefoot. Anyway, so 9 puppies.
Woof.
Oh, boy.
Woof.
Well, that'll be exciting. Those are going to be valuable dogs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and Ginger, she's cute and sweet on top of it.
All we care about is that they're sweet. So
yeah.
Lambs and chicks and it's spring and there's puppies. And we have around our table with us today Sharon Stewart from Lockwood Cafe. And we wish you all the best in your grand Well, you're not your grand opening.
Which is going to be sometime after June 8th.
Lockwood Gala.
Things are moving along, and what a better use for, who would have thought, an old grain elevator than a fine restaurant that serves good coffee, good crepes, and lots of other good stuff. Mention your website. or how to contact you again.
Yeah, so
come on, knock on the door, yeah, right?
We'll be there, hanging drywall or something. You can contact us through our Gmail. It's lockwoodcafe@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, Lockwood Cafe, at Facebook, Instagram, Lockwood Cafe. It's all Lockwood Cafe. Or if you want to go to the Kickstarter page, that's where we've accumulated a lot of the information for people to kind of follow us this month. Again, Lockwood Cafe.
Good. This is a good example of a local thing with lots of local twists and turns, lots of local interest. We're looking forward to this, a fine addition to the Central Iowa food scene. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Thanks to Sharon for joining us today. And here's a few upcoming things. Besides the Lockwood
right.
Cafe.
The outdoor season is beginning. Yeah. Yippee!
There's farmers markets. Find a farmers market in your area and get to know a farmer. You can get into the darndest conversations at a farmers market. Yes, you can. All kinds of things happen there. Also, for those who keep track of this sort of thing, this is National Bike to Work Week, so celebrate that. A Bike to Work Week, you can do that. And it is also National Public Gardens Week. Gardens here at Iowa State University. We'll have a free day on Friday, May 17th. Celebrate public gardens. And Wednesday, May 15th, at Cook's Emporium, newly refurbished, newly opened, downtown Ames, Cook's Emporium is having a frosting workshop, 10 a.m. to noon on Wednesday, May 15th. Don't we all need a frosting workshop?
I have to say, so Mindy, the shop's proprietress, has a mother-in-law who bakes stunning, stunning, stunning
beautiful
cakes. So maybe
beautiful
she's doing the frosting. If so, it will be a masterpiece.
And Cook's Emporium's classes are just amazing.
You taught one, didn't you?
I did,
on your
yeah
syrups, right?
Yeah, and they're just so wonderful to be a part of. Mindy is amazing to work with. I cannot say enough good things about
right
Cook's Emporium.
I did biscotti, and I'm going to do some new ones this summer, too. Yeah, and boy, did she make a place for cooking class.
Hey, fancy kitchen, go
whoa
in and take a
yes
gander.
It's beautiful.
Oh, isn't it nice that people like to cook?
That's Cook's Emporium downtown on Main Street.
Good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find us here Tuesday at noon, live, or we repeat at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening. We had music today by the band Persons of Quality. So there were some golden oldies, English country dance tunes from the early 1700s. So we like to keep up on things around there. You heard Three Coney Walk, Harlequin in the Mud, and we're going out with one called The Jolly Company. Yes, that is Persons of Quality from their CD, The Elephant's Stairs. Support KHOI. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had fine engineering and lots of good advice from Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.